The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, June 28th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Tim Kirkchin. I'm at home after an overnight drive, and it's a baggage claim Monday after a busy weekend with Buster. So last night on Sunday Night Baseball, the Dodgers beat the Cubs 9-1. Clayton Kershaw was absolutely brilliant. He had 13 strikeouts, all on breaking balls. That slider is absolutely unhittable when he locates it like he did last night. His curveball is still one of the best we've ever seen. The Cubs now, by the way, have struck out 14 or more times in three straight games. They haven't done that in over 100 years, or it's been 100 years since they did anything like that. That's amazing. And just to see Kershaw in his prime like that at age 33 was really, really impressive.
Ball and a strike of the left-hand hitter McKinstry. The pitch. Swing and a high fly ball. Well struck right field. That one back, way back there, and that one is gone. It's a grand slam. McKinstry leaves the park with the bases loaded as he blasts one over the right field wall, his fifth of the season, and it is 4-0. 2-0 to Bellinger. Here it comes. Swing and a high fly ball drilled deep right field. Going back to the wall is Bryant, and that'll sail away. It's gone. Bellinger with a towering home run over the right field wall, and it is 6-0. 3-2 now. Swing and a miss, struck him out, and he's got a baker's dozen. 13 punch outs for Kershaw here tonight.
And yesterday in Northern California, the A's beat the Giants 6-2. The Giants have been red hot, but the A's are pretty good too. Aramis Garcia had a big RBI single to make the score 6-0 Oakland.
Here's the pitch. Swung on line toward short, bouncing off the glove of Dubon and into left field. Around third is Chapman. Here comes a throw by Slater. The slide. He's safe. Beats the tag by Posey, and it's 6-0 Oakland.
A terrible injury for Indians outfielder Josh Naylor in the midst of the Twins' defeat of the Indians on Sunday. Here was the call.
Philadelphia, Michael Jack Schmidt. Popped up, shallow right. Naylor, look out! He is down in a heap, and he is hurt. Goodness. Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, that's awful. That is a really bad injury. That is a really bad injury. Oh, man. Josh Naylor being taken off on the emergency cart.
So the Astros have a Major League best 7 finalists to start in the 2021 All-Star Game. The top 3 finalists for each position based on fan voting in each league plus designated hitter for the American League were announced on Sunday. 3 teams, the Dodgers, Cubs, and Blue Jays, have 5 finalists for the Midsummer Classic, which will be played July 13th at Coors Field. And now we have 3 players locked in for the Home Run Derby. Besides Shohei Ohtani, the Mets' Pete Alonso and the Orioles' Trey Mancini have accepted bids. That leaves 5 spots open officially. Shohei Ohtani yesterday had a double, a triple, a stolen base, and his 25th home run of the year. It sounded like this.
Here's the next pitch, and Shohei Ohtani lifts a high fly ball that's hit pretty well out into left center field, and it's out of here! Shohei is having a day for the Angels. He hits a home run here in his last 3 at-bats. He's had a double, triple, and now homer. That's an add-on run. The Angels lead it 6-4, and Sunday is showtime.
Rafael Devers hit the 16th 3-run homer of the season for the Red Sox. That's most in baseball. It gave the Red Sox a 4-0 lead in the first inning. They went on to sweep the Yankees. And here is the final call.
Rios delivers. Swing and a miss. It's over. The Red Sox have swept the New York Yankees for the 2nd time in the month of June. They swept in New York early in the month. They sweep here.
The Mariners beat the White Sox yesterday 3-2, but the bigger news is that Mariners pitcher Hector Santiago was the first pitcher this season to be ejected for having a foreign substance, in this case, in his glove. After the game, Santiago and Mariners manager Scott Servais discussed.
Third inning coming out of the game, I'm expecting them obviously to check me every inning. I kind of joked around with him moving like if I was going to run away. Because I know I wasn't using anything besides rosin, you know, what's given to us. Because going into this, once it came up, I was just like, I'm going to use rosin. That's what we got. I don't want this to be a big thing. I don't want this to happen to me.
Our guys are doing the right thing. They're following the rule. The umpires are trying to do the best they can in a tough situation. He thought he felt something sticky. They can go ahead and look at it. There's no sticky stuff in the glove.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
The Dodgers' Trevor Bauer spoke with the Sunday night baseball crew from the Dodgers' dugout. Very, very honest. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of talk about the first week of foreign substance checks. Please give this a listen.
As we go to the bottom half of inning number four, reigning National League Cy Young Award winner Trevor Bauer pitches tomorrow in the first of a quick one with the San Francisco Giants, joins us tonight. Trevor, thanks for the time. So Twitter is standing by, man. Here it is. Let it eat. You have made your opinions very clear on the banned substances memo by MLB. Let's go back a little bit, though. Why do you think this was necessary in the eyes of the league? Why has it come to this?
I think you have a couple people on the competition committee at MLB that decided that they could get some offense back in the game if they got rid of some of the foreign substance usage. They assumed spin rates would drop and offense would go back up. You know, there's obviously the three true outcomes kind of dominating baseball right now: walks, home runs, or strikeouts. So I think that's kind of where they started, and then pitchers were just being like so blatantly obvious about it. I mean, you get guys sitting there on the mound like grabbing their glove and like looking at their fingers and stuff like that. So not really a good look, but not something that I don't think it's something that should have been done, you know, mid-season like it was.
So, Trevor, I mean, one thing is, it's not a new rule. Major League Baseball is enforcing an old rule. What adjustments would you make if you were in charge? What kind of adjustment would you make to make it better?
Well, so I think that, you know, one, it would have been done either before this year. Well, I mean, if I was in charge, it would have been done a long time ago, 2017 or 18 or whenever it was when it really started taking off. And I guess the history behind it is, like, we didn't really know how impactful spin rate was until we could measure it. And that came along with TrackMan and now Hawkeye. But it came along in the mid-2010s. So it's kind of a new phenomenon where players are using it for performance enhancement as opposed to just get a grip on the ball. And so I would have done something about it a long time ago. But I think where it stands right now, I'd like it, you know, I would have liked it to be done in the off season. And then you need to have some sort of approved, like, grip on the ball, whether you're going to say it's just rosin on the back of the mound or you're going to give pitchers an approved substance or whatever the case is. But you need to have some objectivity to it, too, where an umpire isn't just, you know, we saw earlier today an umpire checks and thinks the glove is sticky, but we don't know what sticky is or isn't. No one's really defined that. You know, some guys sweat and use rosin and nothing happens. Some guys sweat and use rosin and get sticky. Like, everyone's so different. So you need to have some objectivity to it. And instead of the umpires checking, like, let's just handle it like TSA, where you walk in the dugout, there's a third party there, they swab your hand, they swab your glove, run it through a machine, and if you have over a certain amount of a certain substance on your hand or on your glove, you know, it flags it, and then you can make the decision and the discipline around that. That way you're not doing it on the field. And whatever the case is. And that way there's some sort of objectivity to it, because right now it's super subjective.
Trevor, it really seems like, in hearing the voices of pitchers, position players, since this all went down, that there might have been a middle ground that everybody could have come to. But as you know, the relationship now between the players and the owners, not necessarily collaborative, productive. Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I think there's just a lot of kind of media war stuff going on. You know, everyone kind of talks and negotiates through the media, whether they will say it or not. It's, you know, MLB will leak stuff to the media about proposals to gauge fan interest, to gauge player reaction, to gauge stuff like that. And then, you know, the union isn't, the union does the same thing at times too. You know, it's not completely one-sided. And so you end up with just distrust on both sides, which isn't good for our game, I don't think. You know, people don't sit down and talk the same way they used to. I think that's a societal thing too. You know, attention spans are a lot shorter now with Twitter and TikTok, and that's kind of the direction everything's going. So people don't sit down and talk and consider the nuance of different situations nearly as much as they used to. And so I think it just always, it breeds distrust and contempt in a lot of cases.
So peer into the future for us here, Trevor. Down the road, whether it's months or years, are we going to look back on this like we look back at limiting mound visits? It's kind of a whatever now, or is this really going to change the game?
No, you'll look back on it. It'll be like a little footnote. Like, it won't even really be a thing. I mean, it's already, like, the way it's being enforced right now is pretty ridiculous. Like, it'd be very easy to get around the rule if people wanted to, unfortunately. And so then you still have the same gray area and ambiguity that you had before, where players don't know, you know, what is and isn't okay, because some guys are doing it and getting away with it and blah, blah, blah. Until they address, you know, putting some sort of tacky substance on the ball, or giving pitchers an approved substance on the back of the mound, or some sort of objectivity to the rule, it's not really going to be heavily enforced. You know, and a lot of the umpiring crews are put in a terrible position where they have to do something that they don't want to be doing, and, you know, there's no recourse if they say it is sticky or isn't sticky. They look like the bad guy. So a lot of umpiring crews don't want to do anything about it if they don't have to. So just asking pitchers not to be super obvious about things. And so I think, you know, this offseason it'll get solved and there'll be some sort of rule that comes out that kind of makes everyone forget about it. But, you know, for the rest of this season, you know, because they chose to do it in the middle of the season, it'll be, you know, front and center. And that's all everyone will talk about with baseball is, you know, are the pitchers cheating or not?
Well, all that being discussed, those are all fair points for sure. The 1-2 home. Tommy Nance bid for a 1-2, three inning comes to an end as Justin Turner sends one into right center field. Turner heading into second with a two-out double.
Well, Trevor, I mean, can you describe for our viewers at home, I get asked all the time and I don't have the answer, but what is the difference with having a little stick on your fingertips versus not? Can you describe it for the fans at home?
Yeah, so there's three scenarios. You have one where you have absolutely nothing on, your hands are dry or they're sweaty or whatever, but you have no rosin, you have no substance, anything like that. And if your hands are dry or your hands are really sweaty, the ball will slip out of your hand because there's really no grip on a baseball, and that's why pitchers want to use something. The next scenario is you have a little bit of tack, that's rosin and sweat, that's sunscreen and rosin that people use, that's some sort of just tack on the ball. that allows you to hold the ball in your hand and not have to feel like you have to squeeze it. And generally, everyone's kind of okay with that. But if you, you know, it's not going to give you a ton of performance enhancement because the ball's not like glued to your fingers or stuck to your fingers, really. It's just so you don't have to grip the ball super hard with your hand, and you can kind of relax into the throw. And the third scenario is the performance enhancement stuff. That's your, you know, pine tars, your pelican grip dips, your spider tacks, your, you know, whatever other mixtures that people make. And that allows you to, you know, really relax with the ball, and the ball kind of stays stuck to your fingers. So it does two things. It increases the friction between your fingers and the ball, which allows you to spin the ball faster. And it also keeps the ball stuck to your fingers longer so that you can actually apply the force in a way that's tangential mm-hmm. to the surface of the ball, which increases spin, as opposed to putting force directly through the center of the ball, which is going to give you more like linear mm-hmm. velocity, but not as much spin. And it's unclear whether the majority of the spin rate increase comes from the position that it allows you to get to or the increased friction on the ball, or if it's a combination of both. But that's really where the performance enhancement comes from.
The ball back up the middle that will make for an end of the inning. Trevor, thanks for the thoughtfulness, for your candor. We appreciate the time, man. Good luck tomorrow against the Gigantes.
Thanks, guys.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. But for your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate unloading and loading of passengers only. No parking in the White Zone.
Okay, Buster, I know you got to catch a flight here, so let's go with this. You interviewed Trevor Bauer last night. Fascinating guy. How did that go?
I thought he was really even-handed, Tim, and I thought it was funny. Normally, as you know, on social media, nobody agrees on anything. On Twitter, nobody agrees on anything. And after the interview was over, so much of the response was, boy, that was great. Because Trevor explained some of the technical aspects and how it benefited pitchers. You know, I asked him, why the union and Major League Baseball don't have a more collaborative, productive relationship. He spoke to both sides of it, which I had a lot of respect for. He was very even keeled. And I think he gave people a lot of information and, you know, explained his perspective about why this is a work in progress. And, you know, it was very interesting to hear him basically say out loud that he thinks that some pitchers are back to cheating.
Well, we always get an honest opinion from Trevor Bauer, and that's what we like the best. Okay, Hector Santiago yesterday got caught, Buster, and was ejected from the game. What did you make of all that?
Now, before we get to that, I'm curious to see what you thought about what Trevor Bauer said.
Well, I didn't see it because I was driving home last night in the middle of the night from Bristol to home. I got home at 2:00 in the morning, so I can't even speak to it because I was listening to Boog and singing the whole way home. So I just know when Trevor Bauer speaks, people listen these days. And the fact that he's willing to take both sides of any argument, including an argument against himself, I think is refreshing in this day and age.
Yep, I'm 100%. Hector Santiago, I think you'll agree with me. He's one of the nicest people in baseball. And when I saw him busted, I part of me kind of felt for him that he had the glove confiscated because you know, he is such a nice guy. He's a fun guy. And it was interesting to hear how he and Scott Servais both basically were saying, look, that's not what it was. It was rosin and it was in there. And you hope that turns out to be the case when Major League Baseball officials
test whatever's in the glove. Yes.
Yeah, but Buster, I'm with you completely. He says it's rosin and it's sweat. I agree with him. I agree with Scott Servais. But if it's on the inside of the glove, doesn't that make it illegal, whether it's illegal substance or not in there?
I can't answer that. I'm not sure how they would do that. That would be hard to police, though, wouldn't it? Because if you have pitchers who are putting this, you know, rosin and get some sweat and rosin on their hands, and then some of it goes inside the gloves. I don't know how you could hold pitchers accountable for that if there's some residue that builds up over time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. This is the whole point. The policing of this is the difficult part. Now they have to examine it. And if they're, you know, if it's not overturned, he's going to serve a 10-day suspension. So this first one is more important than the others, is it not? It sets a tone.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And as we go forward, I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, what sort of adjustments that we see. One source told me over the weekend that there is a general hope that that the umpires, you know, are able to, Major League Baseball basically allows them to take a step back, and then they use manager challenges in order to do this. Tim, I got to say, I hate that plan. I think if you're going to check, then you have to check aggressively. Because if you leave it to the managers, we're going to go right back to the old, you know, gentleman's agreement, because everyone's going to know which pitchers are probably using something. It can't be driven by the teams. It can't be driven by the players. It has to be enforced by the umpires.
Right. Okay. There were more foreign substance check moments last night at Dodger Stadium. Agreed?
There were, and a couple of interesting points of timing. And this is some of what I heard. I'm sure you did, too, during the week. How, you know, people thought, hey, on some of these foreign substance checks, let's use some common sense. For example, you know, the young Cubs pitcher last night who absolutely got lit up, 6 runs in the second inning. He came off after giving up those 6 runs and he wasn't checked. The check happened for him after the third inning, after he put a 0 on the board. And I don't know if the umpires intended to check him after the second inning. But if they did, I think it was great that they waited until after he actually had a good inning. Because his one, you know, baseball, longtime baseball person said to me, if he actually had foreign substances on him and he was looking for competitive advantage, they certainly didn't work. But later in the game, I think the umpires didn't read the room very well, Tim. Clayton Kershaw had one of the best outings that we've seen, you know, in the latter stages of his career here. You know, Kershaw at age 33, striking everybody out, using his slider in the shadows to confound the Cubs hitters, has the great outing, and he finishes it up the eighth inning, and you know he's coming off the field for the last time, and the Dodger fans are rising in the ballpark to cheer him, and he gets intercepted. And the fans at Dodger Stadium booed him like crazy, and you really wish in that case, maybe the umpires could have said, look, the Cubs have taken out, you know, Chris Bryant, they've taken out, Anthony Rizzo's come out with an injury, they've taken out Wilson Contreras, they've given up, let Clayton Kershaw have his moment, let the fans have their moment with Kershaw. What do you think?
Right. Reading the room is really important, Buster, and that they didn't do a good job of that last night. However, reading the room in a completely different set of circumstances here is just a work in progress. Everyone's just going to have to figure out the best way to do this. We're not going to figure it all out in a week. We've been at replay for years, and we still haven't figured it out. This is going to take some time, and everyone needs to have some patience. But in the meantime, Buster, in the aftermath of this crackdown, you've written there's been a massive reassessment in the industry. Explain what you're talking about.
It's fascinating because what teams are realizing as we have this foreign substance crackdown is they don't really know for sure what's real and what's not real about what some of these pitchers have accomplished. For example, the other night, there was a veteran reliever who came into a game, Tim, and this is someone who's known to have this wipeout breaking ball, and he didn't have it. It was like it disappeared. And so his team now has to sit there and go, well, wait a second. You know, what is he as we move forward? I've heard that about a number of relievers. I've heard it about some starters. Whether it's fair or not, it's certainly, if you read the papers in New York today, it's a big part of the conversation going on around about Gerrit Cole. You know, without foreign substances, you know, potentially helping whatever he was doing, is he a different type pitcher? look, those are questions that the Yankees and 29 other teams are asking, and they have to get answers really quickly, not only in the major leagues and the minor leagues, but in draft eligible players, because the clock is upon them. The draft is in less than 2 weeks. The trade deadline is just a month away. And so his teams are trying to figure out, okay, if you have a you know, an asset you want to trade and you're looking for pitching prospects from another organization, you want to be as sure as you can that that guy is still going to be effective. If you're going to, you know, invest in a pitcher on your team, you want to make sure he can actually help you going forward. And if you're thinking about drafting a pitcher, you want to make sure that what he's accomplished as an amateur isn't built on foreign substances. I'm not going to mention the conference, but I had an executive say to me the other day that there's one conference in particular where everyone's wondering, yeah, that conference is overrun by foreign substances because their spin rates are exceptionally high and because their fastball have gained so much velocity. They wonder if that's a place where maybe you're going to shy away from as you go into the draft. It's amazing how this reassessment, Tim, has to happen so quickly.
Yeah, and again, Gerrit Cole gave up a first-pitch homer in a game for the first time in his career. He gave up two homers in the first inning for the first time in his career, and he gave up three homers in a start for that ties his career high also. And one of the Red Sox, of course, Garrett Richards, actually said this week, and I believe him, he said, "I'm just not the same pitcher without a little bit of grip with the way he spins that curveball and everything else." So I'm with you on this. I think teams really have to examine, should we go get that guy in a trade, give up two young players to get him? Is he the same pitcher we thought he was a month ago? And that's what makes this very, very complicated. So speaking, Buster, of the Yankees and the Red Sox, what did you make of that weekend series when the Red Sox just wiped out the Yankees?
There's a clear difference between the two teams. And if you're Brian Cashman and you're looking at that team, you have to now take action. It was very interesting to hear Aaron Boone say after the game, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically said, yeah, we got to fix our problems. And there's a lot of speculation in the New York papers today that they're going to shake up some of the outfielders, maybe Clint Frazier, who hasn't really hit this year. Miguel Andujar has been inconsistent. Might be two guys where, you know, whether it's they send them to the minor leagues and call up and give somebody else a chance, a Florial, or if they go and make a trade for somebody. But I think after what they saw this weekend, they do have to shake it up somewhat. What do you think?
Buster, they're fourth in their division. They're tied for the eighth best record in the American League. They're 0-6 against the Red Sox this year. They've been outscored by four runs for the season. They're 14th in the American League in runs scored. They need another starting pitcher, if not two more. And their defense is questionable, especially at shortstop. These are enormous problems, and they have to start fixing them right now. But Buster, you know, from within, there aren't great solutions from within the Yankee organization, at least not that I can see. And that trade market, just like we were talking about, it's not the most robust trade market, but they're going to have to do something, and they're going to have to do something now because it's getting late already for them. I can't believe we're saying that after 77 games, but when three teams are ahead of you in your own division, and if you don't make the playoffs with all the money and everything wrapped up in this season, that's not a good look at all for the Yankees. Am I overreacting here?
No, I don't think so. And what's interesting, again, with this mass reassessment of pitching assets and pitchers throughout the sport, it complicates it. You know, what I heard over the weekend from folks was, look, if you identify a pitcher who in the past has had success with four-seam fastballs at the top of the zone and curveballs at the bottom of the zone, those are scary guys. Think of them like stocks, like it's a kind of a risky stock. And on the other hand, I heard over the weekend that the old-fashioned sinkerballer, Tim, you know, the guy who, you know, can run that two-seamer, get some ground balls, that guy is like gold in this current market. In other words, someone who can be relied upon where you're not worried quite so much about whether or not he's going to be affected by foreign substances.
Yeah. And just a point, though, Buster, about all of this, like, wow, the pitchers are all affected. We've had 12 shutouts since we started this process. We've had another no-hitter, the seventh, and we had a starting pitcher, Aaron Nola, strike out 10 consecutive batters. I mean, it's not like you take the sticky substance away and the pitchers have no chance. They still have tremendous stuff, but it's going to be – it's going to be lessened, of course, if they can't get the grip they want. And I agree with you on the two-seam guy. Maybe we'll see a slow return to the sinker-slider guy who can get you to hit a ground ball instead of striking you out every time. Okay, Buster, last question. A home run derby field. We've got Shohei Ohtani, which is like the greatest thing ever. Pete Alonso, who won 2 years ago and can't wait to repeat, and now Trey Mancini. So we're three down. What do you think of the threesome?
Love it. I love the fact that Trey Mancini is going to get this opportunity. You know, I was sent a direct message to him over the weekend, and he seemed really excited about the opportunity to do this. And what a great story, you know, to have him in there. And I'm so excited. And Pete Alonso has made it very clear that he wanted to try to defend his title. I think he's going to do that as long as he's allowed to do it because he has so much fun with it. That's pretty cool. The guy I'm watching now, Tim, is Ronald Acuña Jr. Like, we know that Vlad Jr. is not doing it. We know Fernando Tatis Jr. is not doing it. I'm hoping Ronald Acuña Jr. does it.
Yeah, well, I just go back to a few years ago when he got bored hitting home runs to left field in the home run derby. So he just said, all right, I'm going to have a bunch of homers to right field now just as a rest. And then he did. Then he started pulling again. It's great. You know, Buck Showalter told me about Trey Mancini, what a great kid he is. We all know that. But he said when he first came up, and really it still works. Every time you ask him a question, the answer is always good, good. Good, good. That was Trey Mancini. That was his nickname when he came up with the Orioles. Good, good. Well, this is all great, great. That not only is he in the home run derby, but he's having a terrific season for the Orioles. He's the comeback player of the year. If he doesn't play another game this year, what he's come back from is great. And it just gives a little more personality and a little more, just a little bit more pizzazz to the home run derby that a cancer survivor is going to be in the home run derby in Colorado. It is such a great thing. Okay, Buster, catch your flight. All right. And just get on the plane and get home safely. All right.
Absolutely, Tim. Thanks for filling in.
Okay. See you soon. And Buster went rapid fire with Albert Pujols.
Albert, you've talked about the fun you've been having since joining the Dodgers. Describe what you enjoyed.
Well, just, you know, I felt as soon as I walk in, you know, my years back in St. Louis, you know, just I felt the clubhouse, the energy, the playing against this guy for 20 years, you know, on the other side. Now I get to see, you know, the preparation, what they go about every day and what they have the success, the history of this organization. So for me, I mean, to be able to have this opportunity, you know, to wear this uniform and help this ball club out, hopefully this year to win another championship is pretty amazing. So, you know, I want to thank Andrew and Doc, you know, for opening that door for me. And it just, I'm having a great time enjoying it, you know, at the same time, you know, try to help these young players, you know, that we have this young talent, you know, as quick as we can, because at the end of the day, they're the future. They're the guys, you know, they're going to help this organization to the next level.
In your first game in Maple Woods Community College, you hit a grand slam and pulled off an unassisted triple play. What was that like?
That was awesome. I mean, that was something. I mean, I still catch up with some of my guys, you know, that I play in college, and we talk about it. It's pretty amazing. You know, it was a really, really good day. One of those days that you're like, what? Did that just happen, you know? But it was awesome, you know. It was a great memories, you know, great memories of Maple Woods, and that's one of those memories, you know. In my first game, like you said, to be able to have that kind of perform is pretty amazing.
I have it on good authority from a former teammate of yours that one of your secret talents is you can really shoot a basketball. Where did that come from?
Where you got that? I love basketball. You know, growing up in the DR, I played baseball and basketball. I had the opportunity to play here in high school for a little bit also. But then I went different direction, you know, and I choose to continue to pursue baseball, which it was the best move that I made. But I love basketball. You know, I love to shoot around. I still, if it was up to me, I continue to play, you know, like a pickup game. But as you know, in our contract, that wasn't allowed to do it. So, but I love, you know, go to the park and take my kids, or when I have friends in the house and just shoot around. You know, I love the game of basketball.
Eduardo Perez says you beat his butt.
Oh, my God. Eddie, I knew that would be somebody close to you that give you that insight.
Many years ago, you told me that getting to 3,000 hits was meaningful to you because of the consistency that it represented. Is there a number that's out there that you might reach that would be meaningful to you?
You know, for me, I think, you know, the success that I have, and obviously the numbers and all that, you know, all of them and everybody knows, but I think that 3,000 hit for me is what stand the most. That's because they're consistent. You know, you have to be really consistent to get to 3,000 hits. You had to be healthy. You know, I was healthy for a little while. Yes, my success were pretty much early in my career, the last kind of 5 or 6 years, you know, with all the injuries that have happened, you know, it's been tough. But I think at the end of the day, you know, that's a number right there, 3,000. That's a really special club, and that's something that I really enjoy. I think, you know, to be able to also, I think 650 doubles and 650 homer, that's pretty amazing. The only player, you know, that ever done that, as, you know, that's crazy too when you look out, you know, over 23,000 players, you know, wearing a big league uniform, and to be able to accomplish that, man, I give God all the glory for allowing me to be healthy and to be able to do that.
Back in 2007, you scored a perfect 100 on your U.S. citizenship test. Describe your preparation.
Crazy, man. That was something that was such a – I was so nervous, you know, every day studying and make sure that I get a good results, and, you know – if you around me, whether it's my preparation for baseball, my preparation to go to school early, or whatever it was, I'm somebody that I always, when I put my mind into, like, I just go all in and I really focus and concentrate on it. And it was a lot of hard work every day, you know, even after the games, you know, just studying and make sure that I get the right answer. And when I went in there, you know, as soon as I walked in that office, it was like this, you know, it started, and I was so nervous. I remember I was so nervous, and I told my wife, man, I don't know if I can do this. I've never been so nervous in my life, but, you know, I'm glad that the result at the end of the day, it paid off, you know, and I scored, you know, 100.
You've written on social media about your love for your daughter, Bella. What have you drawn from her, Albert?
It's just amazing, you know, being around not just my daughter, you know, because that's what started everything with me, with the special need and what I do through the foundation. But I think, you know, what those kids and the adults can teach you every day, that is my passion. You know, I love the game of baseball, but at the end of the day, you know, going to the prong or going to the body walk or doing an event with some of those kids, I mean, it's just amazing. Their love, their smile, their kindness, you know, is something that I learn every day with my daughter. Yes, like everybody else, we wake up on the wrong side one day, and we know that we have to leave her alone. But I think, you know, the patience she has taught me, you know, to have patience, you know, and all that is something that I thank God, you know, for her life. And she has taught me so much.
What have you learned about Clayton Kershaw that you didn't know before you became his teammate?
What I had learned, I know Kershaw for a long, long time, but I think for me, just to see the man, the great leader that he is, one, but I think his preparation is so consistent and crazy. I mean, I just came in a little while ago, and he was like sweating, dropping, you know, and I think he was going to throw a bullpen today, I think, but just his work ethic, you know, with the success that he had in this game. And that's why you see all the Cy Young and the success that he had in this game is because he doesn't take anything for granted, you know, and that's something that I probably expected, but I didn't know that it was like that. It's just to the next level, you know, worked so hard. So, you know, and I think, you know, a great, great like I say, great leader and great family man. You know, I have an opportunity to do great things with him and kind of collaborate with our foundation together. And that's something that for us at the end of the day is about giving back in the community, you know, what God has have given us in our life.
When you taped the machine commercial with John Anderson and Steve Levy, what was that like?
Awesome. One of the best. Besides getting into New York and driving, what was it, I think 3.5 hours, 4 hours to get there. But it was such a great experience. And that's why they calling me today the machine. You know, I had a great, great time with those guys and I really enjoy it. You know, we need to get those commercials back, I believe, you know, because later on, I think, you know, there were several other guys that had a good time with it. But that name, you know, the machine is stuck. I think, and it was after that commercial, you know, I had a great time with those guys.
Who's the better actor, John Anderson or Steve Levy?
Wow, you put me in the hot seat, but I have to say it's Steve Levy. Yeah. Yes, I think, you know, well, I don't know. I don't want to talk bad about any of them, but I had a great time with both of them. So I really enjoyed my time, and they really welcomed me really nice and really helped me to have a great time also.
Albert, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Good to see you.
Bouchambe of ESPN Radio caught up with Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
And here with the manager of the defending world champs, the Los Angeles Dodgers, it's Dave Roberts with us. And let's talk about your team right now. You have Clayton Kershaw starting tonight, Sunday Night Baseball. Where's your group right now? Because obviously, you know, everyone sat there and looked at coming off the great season last year and expecting you guys to cruise in the West. But you've been beat up because of injuries, and you've been able to mainly hang in there. And you're in the throes of a pretty significant race in the West. Where's your team right now?
We've held serve. I think that with everything that's happened, we're kind of right where we need to be. And our guys, we're looking forward to this grind. I think that this, when you get into the middle of the summer, the dog days, as we like to call it, I think that this separates, you know, that old adage, the cream rises to the top. So I think that we're getting healthy and we're prepared for this. It's a very focused group. I think we got kicked in the teeth in San Diego, and then we just got no hit. So I just like the way our guys responded as a team, and I expect a good run here up until to get to that break.
Clayton Kershaw, a guy who obviously you're familiar with in terms of all that he has contributed to the Dodger organization. Where is he right now? How is he feeling confidence-wise with all of his pitches? And what do you expect going forward for the rest of the season?
He's in a great place, physically, mentally. And I think with his pitch mix, I think that he's introducing the changeup a little bit more. Obviously, that curveball is a part of things. And then the slider, he has really good feel for it. And the fastball command. So he has a lot of weapons right now. Didn't have a great one the last time he faced the Cubs in Wrigley, so I'm sure he remembers that. But right now, Boog, he's the face of our organization, and he's going to come and bring that intensity like we all know and love.
You guys had an amazing, dramatic walk-off win yesterday with Bellinger, and, of course, the crowd going crazy. Those are the moments, right? I mean, that's what was missing last year for so much. Was it special in a spot like that? I mean, I saw after Bellinger, everybody's ripping the jersey off him. You gave him a big, giant hug. I mean, that's the energy that you missed from the fans and all the Dodger fans, right?
It is. It is. And we've been sold out here every game since we've been at full capacity. And, you know, the fans have been waiting a long time for moments like that. And, you know, players, they play with emotion. But they feed from the fans. And so for Cody, who's a fan favorite, to walk off the Cubs, you know, one of America's favorite teams and a national televised game, and the fans got to enjoy it. 49,000 people get to see a former MVP walk off the Cubs. And it was a special moment. Our players did it. And I think for me as a manager, to see Cody want to come in a double switch on an off day to take a couple of bats and then to win a game, for me, is very satisfying also.
And the fans get a chance to watch a truly great team night in and night out. Last thing I want to ask you about, you go back to your time with the Dodgers. You're sitting there on the bench, just random game. You look to your right, it's David Ross. You look to your left, it's Alex Cora. If you would turn to both of them and said,
you know, the three of us will be managing in the big leagues probably in about 18, 19 years. What do you think the reaction would have been, and how realistic did you think that was at that time?
I would have said that Alex would have certainly been a major league manager. I would have said there's no chance David or I would have been major league managers, especially because when we had David, he was a rookie and he was very green and naive. So to see him in this chair and myself in this chair, it's crazy. But I think a lot of both those guys, we still have a very good bond and great friendship, and two of my favorite teammates of all time.
Doc, you missed the gratuitous cheap shot opening. He had hair then, too. That's the other thing. He had hair back then.
Yeah.
Remember.
Which one? Both of them, man.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Dave Roberts, as always, great to talk to you. Thank you for the time, sir.
All right, Bo. Take it easy.
Over the weekend, Roxy Bernstein talked with Joe Girardi.
With the skipper of the Philadelphia Phillies, Joe Girardi. It's the Phillies and Mets this afternoon from Citi Field. And Joe, the first thing about you look at the matchup today, and certainly a tough challenge facing Jacob DeGrom. For you as a skipper going up against a pitcher who's having just an impossible season, do you have to manage the game any differently today going up against DeGrom?
Oh, I think so. I think you have to manage where you know that runs are going to be at a premium, and you can't necessarily play back with a runner on third in the first inning because you're worried about, you know, not wanting a big inning. He doesn't give up runs. The interesting thing is I think his home ERA is not as good as his road ERA, but I still think it's way under one. So I don't know how you know, great that is. I mean, he's been something that I've never seen someone pitch as well as he has pitched.
And you've caught some of the elite pitchers that we've seen. You've faced some of the elite pitchers. And the role that he is on right now, is it, like you just said, you alluded to it, but is this, we're looking at like Roger Clemens, Pedro Martinez in your eyes, that he's on that level?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if these guys have ever run a streak like he's running right now. You know, his ERA is like 0.5. He's almost driven in more, I think, than he's given up. I mean, that's the other thing that's incredible about him. I mean, it's just not his stuff. It's, he does everything else right as well, you know, as a fielder, as holding runners, as a hitter. And he's not just a power guy. He's a power guy with excellent command. So you put those two things together and, it's just off the charts.
You saw a fantastic pitch performance for your ball club yesterday. Unfortunately, the bullpen couldn't hold the lead in game one for Aaron Nola, but it had only been done once previously. And that was 5 decades ago that Tom Seaver was able to strike out 10 consecutive batters. What did you see from Nola yesterday?
His curveball was great. You know, that's the one pitch that has been, to me, more inconsistent than anything. And I thought he was able to get inside and bring his sinker back on left-handers. That I thought really helped him. But, you know, it's interesting. You walk through, like, the Tom Seaver area when you come into the ballpark as the visiting team. And I was talking about how great it was to see all the pictures. And then, lo and behold, and I was actually kind of shocked that DeGrom, as well as he's pitched, hasn't done that this year. I think he maybe had 9 or 8 his last start. But it's – Nola's stuff was what we were used to seeing, and he really dialed up a good one.
It's certainly been an interesting week for you, Joe, with what happened earlier in the week between mm-hmm. the Nationals and the Phillies and the Max Scherzer situation. But and then Mike Rizzo came on and said some unflattering things in your direction. You and I have known each other for a long time, and I know the competitor that you are, and you're playing for your team, and you're out there fighting for them. Did you take it personally, the comments that
no.
Mike Rizzo made?
No, I mean, it's always in the heat of the moment people make comments. You're never asked to make comments like 3 days later. So, I mean, I didn't take offense to it. I've known Mike for many years. I like Mike Rizzo. He's always been good to me. So, you know, it's in the heat of the moment. I talk about it, too, like with players sometimes when you make moves that they don't like. They might lash out, and it doesn't really bother me because you want competitors and you want people to protect their players. That's what I'm trying to do, and that's what he was trying to do.
Joe, appreciate the time this morning. Thanks for joining us. Good luck today against Jake DeGrom.
Always a pleasure, Roxy. Have a good day.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Timmy. Bleacher Tweets on a Monday. And you mentioned we were two trains passing the night because I drove from Maryland to Connecticut yesterday, mostly in the daytime, but you did it last night. It took me about 7.5 hours to get back. How long did it take you to drive to Maryland?
Well, I didn't even stop. So
oh, wow.
I went 350 miles in 5 hours and 25 minutes. That's not the land speed record for me, but it's close. But I still got home at about 2 o'clock in the morning. But it makes it quicker when there's no traffic and you don't stop even one time. So that was pretty good by me.
Nice. And you said you were listening to Sunday Night Baseball, obviously on ESPN Radio. But what were you jamming out to in the car?
Well, I listened to the game first, of course, mm-hmm. and I don't know anything about music, Taylor. I mean, I've been to 3 concerts in my life. I met Bruce Hornsby once, which was really cool. And I met Kenny Chesney once. I really got along well with him. And then I figured out why, because he loves baseball and I'm shorter than he is. But I listened to Don Henley. And I listened to Phil Collins on the way home. I mean, I don't know anything else. And those guys are great. But
okay.
I don't know anything about music. I never will.
Hey, I'm not going to yuck your yum over here. Those are good selections. Let's go to the tweets here. First up, we've got Jerry at Blues Cards Tiger. Writes in, give me a reason not to give up on the Cardinals. Without Waino, the starting pitching would be a waste of time. What should be at least a decent lineup is awful. And the coaches in front office always seem grossly unprepared.
Well, I would disagree about the unprepared part, but I would agree that the Cardinals are in some trouble now, and I did not see this coming. This offense should be better than this, but it's not a particularly productive outfield. Paul DeJong, their shortstop, is a really good player who's not having a good year. And even though the corner guys are great players, Arenado and Goldschmidt, they're going to need even more from them. But I worry when Adam Wainwright, who is still really good, has been your best pitcher, you got to work on that. They got to get some people healthy. And their bullpen is so strange. The walk rate out of their bullpen is unbelievably high. And all that has to change. I think their best hope is that as well as the Brewers have played lately, the Brewers are not a great team. They're not going to just run away with this division because of their offensive situation. But the Cardinals have to start to play a whole lot better than they are now, or else they're not going to the playoffs. It's that simple.
The Hunt for Red Sox October writes in, with Kershaw being a free agent at the end of this year, would you bet the family farm he re-signs with the Dodgers? Obviously, this question with the farm betting was for Buster. I think last time you bet your bike.
Well, I don't have a bike, so I couldn't have given that away, but I would have given a bike away. And I should never talk about farm anything because, as I've told you, I milked 1 cow in my life and it was a complete disaster. Buster should handle all farm situations. As for Kershaw, look, there's always a chance he goes back and plays in Texas to finish his career because that's where he's from. But if you're the Dodgers and you have one of the greatest pitchers of all time on your team, and he just struck out 13 last night and looked overpowering again, and he's one of the best guys you'll ever meet, how can the Dodgers not want to keep him as a Dodger for life if he wants to stay there? So I don't think he's going anywhere. Not now, not ever.
All right. Consider the non-existent bike bet on. Let's go to Dan Rice to close things out at DRRice2. Dan writes in, thoughts on the Cubs combined no-hitter counting as an official no-hitter with 4 pitchers while Mad Bums did not. Silly to me, but at least the official number seems right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. If we're going to play, this is my opinion, and I understand why the Alliance Sports Bureau looks at it another way, but in my opinion, if you're going to play a 7-inning game and you don't give up any hits, that's a no-hitter. That's a notable achievement as it is recorded, but it's more than that. It's a no-hitter. And if you're going to play nine innings and you have a combined no-hitter, that's a no-hitter too. I don't want people saying, well, that one doesn't count. Well, of course it counts. That would have helped if Craig Kimbrell, the Cubs closer, had realized that when he got the final out, it was actually a no-hitter. He didn't even know. And that's not the first time on a combined no-hitter that not all the pitchers who pitched in that game knew it was a no-hitter. Bottom line is, I think we should change the rule because you should not be able to step on a mound to start a game knowing I have no chance to throw a no-hitter. But that's the case if you're pitching in a seven-inning game. And if I could do it all over, I would say no seven-inning doubleheaders. Let's just play nine innings like we've been playing since the 1800s.
There you have it, laying the hammer down on a Monday. Tim, thanks for filling in. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, everyone. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for letting me pinch hit. And as tired as I might be today, no sympathy required. At least I got my 3 hours sleep at my house in a bed. Buster slept on an airplane. So a more sympathy for him, less for me.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight Podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.